at that point, Gary saying that, you know what, this is time to start questioning Magnus's dominance.
Now, you know, we can question Magnus' domination, because it's not just a second loss, but it's a very convincing loss.
He got banned in the middle of Title Tuesday by Chess.com, and a lot of people were wondering why.
Is that banned or kicked out of the tournament? I just want to...
Kicked out of the tournament.
I think I saw in like one of these Twitter screenshots that you were playing on Hans's new platform. I don't know much about the events or if it's some arena style or whatever, but how did you find that platform?
I was just in a bad mood that day. And my impression was that they listen, like they have access to my audio on Proctor, but not that necessarily someone is just sitting and listening to me. But like when I finish this huge turn and I bang the table, in the little chat window in Russian, my Proctor writes, "Oh, hey, can you adjust your second camera? By the way, that was some epic swearing."
Boom, welcome back everybody to yet another episode of the C-Squared Podcast. It is just post-Croatia Grand Chess Tour. Just got back from Zagreb, both of us. Fabi, you're in the US, I'm in the US, but we're not around. You're just about to go to Vegas. That should be a fun event, but obviously let's start it off with a quick recap of Croatia. What happened there? How do you feel about the result? Obviously, probably not great, but it was an interesting tournament. There were some interesting moments. And definitely we should touch upon those. And we're also going to have a guest later on in the podcast. But again, let's start with GCT Croatia. Take it away, Fabi.
Yeah, of course, I'm not very happy, to put it mildly. It was one of my worst tournaments recently, although I have had a few bad ones this year. So, but yeah, it was kind of miserable overall. Like not... I didn't play well a single day. You know, I had some days that were acceptable, but no like good days. No days where I felt I played actually well. I mean, maybe the third rapid day was like the closest to a good day. But then the blitz, you know, there was so much potential in blitz too, because even with like how badly I played, if I had scored 2 points more, I would have shared second place. Like, I basically just had to win the last two games. But yeah, it was just bad shape. I mean, especially the last game, although it didn't change a whole lot in terms of my tournament, of course, just the last game at that point, but still it would have changed something. And just completely winning at one moment against Wesley, I basically gave Wesley a huge gift that he got a clear second rather than shared second with a lot of people. It's definitely a big difference when it comes to like Grand Chess Tour points. So yeah, but you know, I was just out of it, you know, the entire time. I was just out of it for some reason.
Yeah, and that's obviously, it's one of those events in which at some point you need to get in the zone. If you never get in the zone, then you're just simply going to have either a mediocre event, or if some of those razor thin games don't go your way, then you're just simply going to have a bad event. So in this case, it was like the game you mentioned against Wesley. It was one of those games which can go either way. In the last few seconds, they didn't go your way, so the result was not great. But yeah, it feels like it's one of those events, all of these like rapid and blitz events, that you need to get in the zone, and it just wasn't the case for you. It wasn't the case for a lot of players, actually. In particular, it was Magnus in the rapid. He just wasn't himself. Nevertheless, still scored somewhat okay.
I didn't really feel like he played too bad. I mean,
I guess for his standards, it felt like he...
Sure, yeah, but okay, it happened. There's some variability. I mean, I think like we tend to also say that like he's in bad form whenever he's not winning all his games. But of course, you know, like we never say that for other people, right? It feels like kind of an excuse. It's like, okay, form goes up and down, but this is normal. So I didn't feel like he was playing so bad. I mean, he had this game against Gukesh that was not a good game, but it also happens in rapid that you don't have...
He scored plus one in rapid, right?
Sorry, what's that?
He scored plus one in rapid, right?
He scored plus one. It was a tough field. Plus one. So, you know, Gukash kind of stole the show in the rapid. There was nobody else who really, like, I guess Duda had a decent event, but there was nobody else who really, like, was running away with it except for Gukash. And Magnus, he started pretty well. Like, he beat Wesley in a nice game. Okay, first game was a solid draw. Then he had this game against Duda where it went a bit out of control. He should have lost objectively at the end. He was losing. He had some other shaky games against Ali Reza. He lost this one against Gukesh. So, of course, it was a shaky performance. But to be honest, many people had shaky performances. Besides Gukesh, they're
exactly.
You know, he was clearly the one in Rapid. And
which was a bit surprising, right?
Oh, like, certainly.
Nobody sort of expected Gukesh to take over the Rapid. Everybody kind of, you know, you sort of went on record to say that his Rapid is very decent, his Blitz is shaky, and you were proven very much correct about that. But a lot of players, especially, notably, I guess, Magnus, before the event said that he's going to treat Gukesh as one of the worst players in the event. Or at least the weakest players in the event, just for the simple fact that Gukesh did not, in previous editions and in this type of events, proven much. Were you of the same kind of mindset going into it?
Well, it's an interesting statement because, of course, you can word it in different ways and get a very different feeling from it. The thing is, in a field like that, where you have based, let's say you have Magnus, and then on the other hand, you have Ivan Saric, who's a 2650 plus GM, but he's a bit of a lower tier than the other players, right? He's the only sub 2700 player. Then you have eight players who are very similar in terms of capabilities. And so to say that he's the weakest among, like, let's say the top eight, not exactly top eight in the world, but pretty much, you know, we could of course put Hikaru in there, we could take someone out, but basically like top eight in the world. It sounds harsh, but then you think about it and it's like, okay, so it's actually not that harsh because we're talking about the best players in the world, right? And we're only talking probably about a degree below. Like, Magnus would not claim that Gukesh is less of a favorite than Saric. Like, obviously Gukesh is a favorite compared to Saric. And then to say that he's perhaps a tier below in, or half a tier below in faster time controls compared to Ali Reza, compared to Duda, compared to Wesley, is not really that controversial based on results. It just sounds very harsh the way he put it. But my opinion of these events is that, you know, you have players who are roughly of the same potential level. Maybe some a bit higher, maybe some a bit lower, but not a huge amount of variance. And so it's not shocking that Gukesh could win the Rapid. It's not shocking that Duda could win the Rapid. I would say even if Saric came away with first place in the Rapid, I wouldn't be shocked. It would be a surprise. But it wouldn't be shocking because it's happened before. We've seen some of these like Grand Chess Tour events where I remember Jordan Van Forest, I think, shared first place once. I think like Etienne Bacro, I think 2022 Zagreb, Jordan shared first place. Like Etienne Bacro once had like plus two in after the Rapid. Even I think Yvonne has probably had some plus score after the Rapid. So I don't think it's like
in the top half.
Yeah, I mean we're talking about very capable grandmasters, and of course and that's definitely a level below the level of Gukesh, who is capable to the point that of course he can win. But if we look at it purely from like a numbers point of view, and gave each player probability at the start, probably he would have less probability to win than Ali Reza would, or than Wesley would. Probably a slightly less probability based on past results. So, you know, it really comes down to how you word things. Magnus worded something in such a provocative way, and also because the online discourse is you know, a little bit reactive, let's say.
He's definitely playing into it, right? I think at this point he kind of understands that people are getting very engaged whenever he says something, let's say, controversial. And he leans into that. Like he's not shying away from saying controversial things.
Maybe he likes it. Yeah, I can't speak
to
that.
I think he likes it.
he might like it. Of course, it's very easy to promote the internet. You don't have to do much. You don't even really have to try. But if you're trying, it's about the easiest thing in the world to do. I think I made like probably the least controversial statement when you interviewed me after the rapid third day, where I basically said that...
A little bit provocative, yes.
I wouldn't... No, I said like the least provocative. I mean, come on. It's like, you know, I basically said that Gukesh had the fully deserved victory. And then at the end, made a small joke in regards to Gary's statement about Magnus's and Gukesh, you know, game. But I felt like it was probably the least provocative statement ever. And then I had to like close my Twitter because it was, I was getting tagged in so many things on Twitter. I just had to close it after a while. And I wasn't even trying to provoke at all. You know, I just made like a small joke. So it is the internet, you know, that things these days have a lot of reach, right?
Yes.
And people really like to fight. Or they just like to provoke in their own way, perhaps. Maybe that's entertaining for them.
I think just that's the way the internet usually converses, right? You need engagement to develop a topic or to develop some sort of a discussion online, and that's going to be pushed by the algorithm. And if the algorithm sees something that's vaguely controversial, is going to push it. That's kind of how it works. And it seems like you have kind of the two parties, the Indians that obviously were very enraged by anybody second guessing Gukesh, maybe for a good reason. I mean, he's the world champion. And he's a very capable player. And everybody else, well, the other camp, at least the ones that were saying, you know what, Gukesh hasn't proven himself in Rapid and Blitz. So based on past results, we shouldn't expect much. But yeah, it's interesting.
But based on past results, I did feel from my own play against him that he can definitely play super well in Rapid. So it's also a matter of consistency. You know, like he can play super well, but will he on that particular day? That's another question. But that he had three really good days is not the most shocking thing ever. You know, it happens. It can happen. Will probably happen in the future. It was a little bit of an exaggerated score, let's say, because everything kind of went in his favor. So you know, it's a hot streak, right? You see someone who can play really well, and then also their opponents are underperforming a bit, and it all comes together, and then you have a score like 7 out of 9, which is an extraordinary score. So we see that all the time, right? Players go on hot streaks. And that's basically what my comment was, you know. I ended up, unfortunately, having to eat my words a bit in Blitz because I did lose to him twice. I also got very tilted near the end when in the penultimate game, I kind of felt, okay, I need to win my last two games. And then he starts repeating moves in the opening, which from his tournament point of view kind of made sense, and then from mine made no sense. And I ended up getting tilted for that. But I was kind of correct that I needed to win the last two games, so I don't know what I should have done in that situation. Probably played a different opening where I don't get stuck with that choice. But yeah, he did have a miserable blitz overall. He recovered a bit at the end, but overall it was a really poor blitz performance. It was like -5 or something, whatever it was, maybe -6. And it did kill his winning chances in the tournament. It was very useful for Magnus, of course.
Speaking of that dynamic, Magnus and Gukesh, just because Gary also made a statement. I think this was after Gukesh's first victory in the Rapid against Magnus, basically beating him back-to-back. And at that point, Gary saying that, you know what, this is time to start questioning Magnus's dominance. And perhaps we're seeing Gukesh starting to become dominant, at least against Magnus. Do you feel that that's the case? Obviously, in Blitz, Magnus proved that was obviously not the case, and Gary should have probably eaten his words. What's your take on Gary's statement?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a ridiculous statement, to be honest. Not because, like, I understand, you know, the word dominance is very controversial in general. It's, again, one of those subjective words. It really depends on what you mean by dominant. But when it comes to changing the narrative on anything, you do need more than, well, certainly one game, more than one tournament, and yeah, definitely more than 3 days of rapid chess. So that's why I said that it sounded like Gary was going for a soundbite in some ways, because it's a very good statement that will draw attention, but it of course makes no sense. And Gary, with all his experience in chess, has probably seen, you know, he's seen the changing of the guard many times, but it doesn't happen in a day. It doesn't happen in a game, which of course he also knows. Like when he decided to retire, he was still the number one in the world. It was maybe a slow process that he would become not the best player in the world. Just for historical accuracy, and because maybe our viewers don't know, you know, all of chess history, Gary retired after the 2005 Linares tournament. He lost the last round to Veselin Topalov, but he shared first place, and then he announced his retirement. But he was still the number one rated in the world player rated number one rated player in the world comfortably. So it was a choice, maybe based, you know, on personal reasons, maybe out of desire, lack of desire to play anymore. But for Gary to have, he was a dominant player for decades. For him to lose his edge as number one would have taken many years after that, most likely, right? He would have still been number one in 2006, 2007, most likely. We can only guess, but most likely.
Yeah.
It's not a process that takes a game, you know, but it can be fun to speculate on these things, of course.
I think it's mostly an accumulation of things, especially regarding to Magnus. He's sort of stopped playing classical a while back. He, you know, withdrew from the World Championship cycle. So he's obviously sort of getting out, at least out of classical. It's fair to say that he's 90% out of classical. He only plays one classical event per year. And then, you know, freestyle, if you want to consider that classical, but even that is not going to be classical anymore.
Yeah.
It's not going to be classical anymore. So you could say that he's with one foot outdoor. When it comes to classical, when it comes to rapid and blitz, he's obviously still enjoying it very much. And I guess it's sort of an accumulation of factors. Gukesh becoming the world champion as the youngest world champion ever. That's obviously a huge storyline. But I guess only time will tell in that regard, and whether Gary's statement was accurate at all.
But even if it happened at some point, it still wasn't accurate at the time. So it's, you know, the other thing is that with Magnus, it's of course interesting because we now have many decades, well, not many decades, but a long period of time to judge his overall career. And he, for most of the time, he was playing mostly classical chess. For many years, chess was centered around classical. It was 80% classical, and then you had the World Rapid Blitz Championship at the end of the year. And then after 2015, you had the Grand Chess Tour, which added a few rapid and blitz events here and there. But there were many years before the Grand Chess Tour when all we had was the occasional World Rapid Blitz Championship, one a year, and the rest was classical purely. And even after that, it was still mostly classical, culminating in a World Championship match, which Magnus played five of. 2013, 14, 16, 18, and 21. And that was five, right? Like,
yeah.
Sure I can still count. But it was mostly classical. And there were times when he had a really good period and he would get a rating. For example, his peak was 2882, I think live peak. And that was a really dominant time. And then there were times when he would have either a rough patch. For example, 2017, you can see this patch. Or 2015, I think, but 2017 especially, where he dropped to around 2820, and there were a few guys, Kramnik, Wesley, and myself, who were around 2810 to 15, and there was not a big difference in terms of rating, and this was not a very dominant time. And so you had these different periods. Of course, overall, when we speak about his career, of course, winning every world championship match he's played and also his record in other tournaments, overall winning record, it's a dominant career. But I feel like these days it's a bit of a safer sort of dominance because he doesn't risk dropping classical rating compared to when he was playing classical events all the time, and there was always that risk that you can lose your rating. And now he doesn't risk classical rating because he doesn't play, and we still judge everything based on the classical rating, right? So, and then when it comes to Rapid and Blitz, he has the best results by far. Like, I think his edge in Rapid, maybe not in Blitz most of all, his edge in like over the board Blitz is huge. And in classical, it's been an edge. Sometimes a significant edge, but not always to the same extent. I don't know what it is exactly about Blitz, but his record in Blitz, like if we only played Blitz chess, then it would be kind of astonishing, like how much of an edge he has over the field.
I think it's also the high number of games for these tournaments. Like I think this is, and this is something that he mentioned as well, because he won 10 out of 12 Grand Chess Tour events that he participated in, which is a ridiculous amount of tournaments. And when I asked him why he thinks he's so dominant in GST events, is he said it's the number of games, 27 games. It's a lot of games. So over a lot of games, he feels quite confident that he will be able to prove himself.
Yeah, that's very logical. I mean, if you have some edge over other players, then it gets exaggerated over a longer period of time. In a 9-game tournament, it might not be as acute, and in 27 rounds, of course, feels very different. But it is also interesting, and also his general, like, he does a bit better in over the board Blitz than online Blitz. I don't know if it's like a big difference, but I think there is some difference there for Magnus. Which is also interesting, but that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah, that's it for the GCT. Obviously, you still have St. Louis. I don't think you didn't play in Poland, right? So you still have St. Louis.
Yeah, I still have a chance. I mean,
you still have St. Louis. Okay, St. Louis Rapid. Yes, Rapid and Blitz, and obviously the Singfield Cup. So still plenty to play for. I mean, it's not a disaster, but you do need to play well in St. Louis. On home turf, which, you know, you generally do. So I think that's to be expected. We'll see how that one plays out. More hot topics. Daniel Narodiski. He got banned in the middle of Title Tuesday by chess.com. And a lot of people were wondering why.
Is that banned or kicked out of the tournament? I just want to
clarify. Kicked out of the tournament.
Okay.
Kicked out of the tournament.
Just want to clarify. It's
I
probably
don't think he. I don't think he has a ban. I don't think that.
Yeah, I would assume so. I think it's a very important distinction.
Yes, and in fact, to talk all about it, we do have Tanya, and he will be joining us in just a second.
Oh, yes. Hey, Nadia. Yeah, we can hear you.
We got you.
I apologize.
No worries. No worries.
I have two backup mics precisely for this. You learn over the course of your career as a streamer that sometimes things don't work for a reason. Sometimes they don't work for no reason. And when they don't work for no reason, the best thing to do is to grab whatever backup device you have and plug it in.
Well,
how's Nadia, the quality?
Well, the quality is great. We can hear you very well. We can hear you quite well as well.
quality's good. Back, it's blown out my ears.
you're back in the middle of it, middle of controversy once again. I try to sum it up for the audience, but I think the best one to do it kind of paint the picture of how everything happened, how it blew up on Reddit, how the whole situation blew up on Reddit. What's the backstory to that, and we'll take it from there. So, paint the picture for us.
Sure. And I'll try to be, you know, as usual, minimum adherence to the facts, maximum drama. It was a stormy Sunday night, you know, the calm, you know, the rain pattered on the windows. No, this was a Tuesday. So this past Tuesday, Of course, I missed actually the first Title Tuesday because I was sleeping, which happens quite often. Second Title Tuesday is 4 p.m. Eastern, so 4 p.m. my time. It's funny, at 3:30, usually I try to prepare my stream and prepare my setup, join through Proctor. Have you sort of rolled out Proctor yet and explained the basics? Or should I take this moment to do that as well?
I did not explain the basics, no. So go ahead and say what it is and say for how long you've been using it, or at least for how long you've been asked to use it.
So I'm not going to get too bogged down. Basically, Proctor is an extra layer of security. It's a lockdown browser. So just like you open, you double click on Google Chrome or Mozilla. I mean, do you know anybody who uses Mozilla Firefox anymore? I don't. you use Mozilla. You download it really quickly when you're asked to by the broadcasting team, Internet Explorer. So it's just a little broadcast or a little browser symbol. You open it. It opens just like a regular browser, except it's kind of like my parents gifted me a computer that would only go to one website to make me feel like I'm an adult using the computer when I was little. It only goes to chess.com. You don't actually have any functionality other than it goes to chess.com, and then you join the tournament as normal. But before you do that, you first have to select your microphone. You select a camera, and then a little QR code appears, which you have to scan with your second device, usually my phone or my iPad. Once you set up that second device, you join Title Tuesday or Freestyle Friday as per normal. The funny thing was, on that particular Tuesday, I accidentally tried joining through the regular browser. And what people don't understand sometimes is, like, you can't join through the regular browser. It just says, it pops, a little screen pops up that says, you must join through Proctor. So I reopened Proctor, but I forgot to click the join button. And then I hopped in the shower, and by the time I came up to start my stream, it was like 4:00 and 1 second. And I realized that I missed the first round. Now, I've done that before, and I'm under no illusions that I win about one Title Tuesday every 2 years. So I was like, this is just not going to be that Tuesday. That's okay. We're just going to chill. So I fire up the stream anyway. It was under 2,900. I'm not in 2,900 any longer, but my form was kind of scary bad. But I was having a chill time. And before the tournament, I also want to be fully transparent and say that Fair Play Casa had messaged me and requested that I pay particularly vigilant attention to enabling or having a mod enable emote only. I assume I don't need to like lay out what emote only is on Twitch, or
I think so. Yeah, I think everybody knows that. Yeah.
We can always go back and clarify, or people can clarify for themselves. Emote only on Twitch, because that's where I stream. I was doing that, and I had a mod do that very promptly at the start of each round. By the time I reached round 8, I had 4.5 points out of 7. I was almost going to withdraw, but I just decided to finish the tournament, whatever. Might as well. And because of the circumstances and some of the frustrations that I have felt, frustrations that I think are born out of a desire for sort of basic standards of fairness to be upheld, right? This is not because I feel like I should be getting any kind of special treatment, but because I think anybody who's an honest player is truly on the side of fair play. We're all on the same team here, and I very much want to be a part of the solution. But because of some of these considerations, I have not felt the sort of logic behind doing emote only, which really does harm the experience for the viewer. And so I played round 8 with emote only not enabled. I was not looking at the chat. I won fairly quickly. And right after the conclusion of the game, go ahead.
For clarification purposes, sure. The stream is delayed, right? So
I was not streaming on a delay.
There was no delay. Okay. Because that's, I think that's fairly important.
So as far as I understand it, and I might understand it incorrectly, you either have to stream on a delay according to the rules, or stream with emote only enabled, or both if you're a goody two-shoes, you know, and you want to be a teacher's pet. I did not do either. So at the conclusion of round 8, I was kicked from the tournament. It's one of those things you're like, wait, you know, this character in this video game has this functionality. It was a little notice displayed at the event at the top of the chess.com browser. You have been kicked. And of course, there was like 5 seconds where I was like, wait, what? It's like, you haven't what? Because I've withdrawn from tournaments before, and I have been withdrawn from tournaments before, but usually by my dad or by my mom or my coach.
It's hard to say that chess.com was acting somewhat within the boundaries of their own rules.
Entirely. I think a lot of people who were expecting for me to dispute the rectitude of the ban, like, it would be incredibly stupid of me to do that. I fully accept that they were within their, not just within their right, but They were simply, by one reading of the situation, I strongly disagree with this reading, and I feel like this reading of the situation will not lead to the conclusion that I desire, which is for the situation to be improved. But by that strict reading, I violated the rules, and I fully accept the ban. I accepted it immediately. I had a lesson start right after the stream, so of course, like, there was a you know, that drama part of me wanted to break down and start sobbing, but I've had one of those incidents, like, at least, you know, let's wait a year after the world blitz, like, let's give it until December. So I, you know, I was obviously upset. I made that known to my stream, but I also was not hysterical. I understood that nothing good was going to come out of the emotional diatribe, whatever that would look like. So I ended the stream. I had to give a lesson. So life moved on. The earth continued to rotate as it does to this day. So that's the basics.
Can you explain how it works, how the proctor works, how it feels specifically for players? When did you start getting proctored, I guess?
So I have the email pulled up here. I got the email. Of course, I saw the rollout article, which came out a couple months before the email that I received. You guys can still hear me, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so the email was February 21st. I responded 17 minutes later, which is a personal record. Dear Daniel, you've been chosen to be part of the early contingent of players using Proctor. And I know it's going to sound weird now, but I was pretty happy because I'm a nerd. You know, I like to be the goody two shoes. And when I got this email, I was fully under the impression that there was going to be this early period, that there was going to be an honest effort to make Proctor seem exactly the same as a regular browser. And I don't see anything wrong with the idea of the sort of standard bearers of the community being asked to take the initiative and show the skeptics that, look, I'm using it. Yep, I'm doing a second camera. I was very loud saying how I'm happy to do, you know, two cameras or eight cameras. And so it would be very disingenuous of me to suddenly start saying, oh, you know, why me? Are you suspicious of me? I didn't interpret it that way at all. I very happily started using it. But my happiness lasted in only a couple of minutes before I realized that this was going to seriously harm my playing experience. And even after that, my optimism, you know, was not entirely gone. I was still, you know, very hopeful that things would move pretty quickly. And unfortunately, that has not been what has happened so far. 7 months or 5 months later, almost.
Move very quickly, as in you will not be required to do the proctoring, or the proctoring will just work more seamlessly, or everybody will be, let's say, asked to do the proctoring? Like, what was your ideal solution?
So first, I want to make sure that I don't drag the discussion into an area you're not sort of interested in. So there's a couple of separate things here, which I think are important to keep separate. The first is, like, the question about to what extent does Proctor give a disadvantage to the people using it? How, let's say, bad is the user experience? I don't think it's disputable personally that there is a disadvantage. There's a discussion to be had about the extent of it. That's sort of one separate topic. The second topic is, how long was I expecting to have to use Proctor before, A, everybody would be required to use it, B, nobody would be required to use it, because information would be gleaned that would then allow chess.com to roll it out properly, proctorly. Or C, which is actually what I thought would happen, there would be some sort of rolling basis where people whose last name starts with an N through M, you have to use it on Tuesdays and Fridays, and, you know, Cirilla and Caravana have to use it Wednesdays and Fridays, or whatever, Saturdays and Sundays. Unfortunately, that was not happening. And despite the assurances that I kept hearing, like the state of chess.com, which came out, I think, end of March, there was an assurance that everybody would be using Proctor in a few months. That's a direct quote. There was also an assurance that chess.com would be transparent about the challenges that it would be facing as it rolled Proctor out universally. So I want to reiterate that I'm here to help this process happen as fast as possible. I'm not here to be yet another, you know, part of the screaming hordes that are telling the Fair Play team, you must catch all the cheaters, yet you must not intrude at all on players' user experiences. I know that they have an impossible situation, and it kind of breaks my heart that that anybody would think of me as, you know, appearing intransigent or doing a power trip when the situation is so kind of emotionally charged to begin with. That's not it at all.
Just So I understand, because I haven't used Proctor. What makes it so difficult, or what makes it so negative towards your play during the tournament?
So first of all, I'm not advocating that people do this, but anybody can install it and try it out. The first thing, of course, and again, I'm going to try to be very fact-based here. I'm not suggesting that any of these things, if taken alone, are a big deal. Absolutely not. And even taken together, they're a fairly small deal unless you are competing for like the top prizes, and every one of these things is seriously felt. The first thing is that, of course, you have to start getting ready early because you cannot join the tournament like I used to. I roll out of bed at 10:58 and I either join it from bed or like click the button as I'm like opening my other eye. You have to get dressed because you have to enable your camera. Well, you don't have to get dressed, but then you've got, you know, Salim from Istanbul or Boris from Karaganda, you know, looking at your junk in the morning, and that's not in my bingo card. So you kind of have to start getting ready early. That's not always possible. So I missed probably 5 or 6 Saddle Tuesdays and Freestyle Fridays total because I simply wasn't home by the time I had to start getting ready. Of course, also Proctor has sometimes bugged. So there was one time where I tried to join it and it said mic not detected. Now, I know you guys are thinking, that sounds like Danya, but I had 3 mics connected. I was trying my laptop mic, and it was auto-closing the browser. And I started kind of freaking out in the game chat. I was able to join that particular tournament, but obviously that kind of thing in various manifestations has happened a few times. Then the playing experience itself. It's a little bit laggy. It has always been a little bit laggy. I have a pretty high refresh rate. Obviously, I have a gaming monitor, so the pieces are kind of buttery smooth. Through Proctor, when you're also live streaming, it's a pretty heavy strain on your computer. And on my laptop...
It's stuck in the mud, yeah?
It's stuck in the mud, but very slightly. I mean, very slightly, but you know I'm a bullet addict and everything, and I can feel that. And finally, when you open Proctor, you see that there's a chat message, there's a chat box through which the Proctor person can communicate with you. And if you do not have your second camera properly aimed at your monitor and your main camera enabled, they will not hesitate to let you know about that and ask you to correct that at any point, sometimes during the game, sometimes when I have 1 point out of 3 and it's clear that I'm not trying to break the rules. So there was a feeling there that you're, you know, Johnny who's timed out on the playground, and, you know, if you're not behaving properly, you're going to be in trouble. And finally, if your second device disconnects, so let's say my phone is not charging while it's acting as a second camera and it dies. You know, like when your seatbelt doesn't fasten in new cars and it starts beeping and you think the car is going to explode. There's a big red message that comes out. Yeah, go on.
The second device is part of the proctoring process.
It is. You scan a QR code.
Most of the players need to have. Actually, most of the players don't need to have their cameras on during Title Tuesdays. So people that are proctored need to have 2 cameras at the same time.
Well, your phone is the easiest. It's the easiest device to use as a second camera. So once you select your mic and your first camera, a QR code comes out. You have to scan that QR code with your second device, select the phone camera or the iPad camera, and then for the first couple of months, I was very obedient and I was like putting the second camera where I was supposed to. I will admit that as my frustration grew, and as my sort of sense that me following the rules to the letter is not concretely leading to improvements, as that sense grew as well, I would like put my second camera just on the little step ladder that I would be using, and it would just be looking at the ceiling, and I sometimes ignored requests to adjust my second camera. That's just your second camera, and if that phone dies, it's going to start flashing this warning that you must reconnect your second device. Last thing, if you are using your phone during the tournament and you like briefly X out, or not X out, if you like, let's say check your text messages and then return to the like Proctor application on the phone, it's going to tell you off about it. It's going to be like, please do not exit out of the application while it's open. Like, I'm sorry, but I want to read my mom's text messages. You know, I'm not trying to like make sure Stockfish is working properly. I'm trying to make sure, you know, I don't want to come over for dinner.
So the user experience isn't too great. That's a hindrance to your play. Mm-hmm. And your assumption was also that at some point, other players would be asked to, or most players or all players, or what were you thinking would be the progression of the system?
Yeah, so there were several sort of progressions, possible progressions that I thought would be valid. Now, again, I think that it would not be very interesting to litigate the extent to which it's a hindrance to play. I think that that much, as far as I understand, is uncontroversial. And chess.com knows this, everybody knows this, but you're asking the sort of leaders of the community to take one for the team and to understand that you're doing something for the greater good. And I accept that unconditionally, that if this is important and if this materially improves the anti-cheating algorithm, I am happy to accept those hindrances and accept not playing the occasional tournament if I'm seeing that there is a very clear date at which everybody will accept those hindrances. So I thought that indeed in a few months, everybody would have to use Proctor. And I saw that the attendance had gone down significantly. I saw that there were a lot of players sort of complaining that Proctor wasn't working well in some countries, or, you know, their computer wasn't able to handle the load. And, you know, chess.com was honest about the fact that it would hit certain issues as it rolled it out for everybody. Again, I received the email on in February. The state of chess.com was in March. By April or May, I was like, all right, guys, well, it's time to either release an update as to what exactly is going on in terms of the overall rollout. Because again, if there was an honest accounting of the issues that were being faced, if chess.com was like, listen, guys, we did not expect that there was this, and this bug that we hit that we can't seem to fix, I would be the first in line, truly, to help work toward a solution. I don't think that anybody honest here is thinking to themselves, look at chess.com trying to maliciously hurt people's experience by using Proctor. I understand that, you know, they're trying out different things. They're at the forefront of fair play, blah, blah, blah. All I was asking for was an honest, transparent accounting of the current status. And yet it was pushed off. Rollout was pushed off. I have no idea if even half of people are still using Proctor. And finally, just very important thing, you know, I know that the optics from the outside, and I know that certain streamers in a certain other language that I speak have already implied this, that only the suspicious ones use Proctor. You know, only the ones that chess.com wants to gather more statistics on use Proctor. And if that were the case, that would be completely fine with me, also provided that that was made clear. But when you're asked to use it, you're not given a reason. Does that make sense?
No,
it's sorry if I'm all
sense.
Over the place.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes perfect sense. And actually, I was sort of about to ask you about that, because it seems like, you know, February, I don't know exactly when the accusations coming your way from Kramnik did arrive. I don't remember. The timeline is a little bit blurry, but it does
seem
much like
earlier. That was earlier. Mm-hmm.
It was earlier, but you know, you kind of were thrown into the spotlight in that regard, right? So I would assume chess.com would have their eyes on you. Now, Fabi said something that before you actually came on, he said that he would not even play if he's asked to play with the Proctor. Like,
yeah,
just,
I really wouldn't. I would just...
Can you like give me the TLDR of that? I don't mean to make you repeat yourself.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just a personal thing. It's not because I think that there's anything... I can't think there's anything wrong with it besides what I've heard from you, because I haven't tried it. I would do it for, let's say, the Champions Chess Tour, because I, you know, it's an important event which I've, you know, given my promise, let's say, to my team to try my best, right? But when it comes to Title Tuesday, I don't have any obligation to play, and I'm not going to put myself through something which I don't even enjoy in the first place, playing those events. And so that's just a personal thing, not because I think that their system is inherently broken, which I do. But just because I'm, you know, I'm not going to go through that process. I've like over time gotten a bit fed up with Title Tuesday specifically. So
did chess.com answer to you, since you said in April, March, or whenever you send them an email, or at least like communicated with them?
Mm-hmm.
Did they answer to that communication?
Yeah.
When you said, you know what, I mean, am I the only one that's using Proctor? Like, what's the situation right now?
So there was an update article around the time State of Chess.com happened, which in State of Chess.com, there was a whole segment dedicated to Proctor, where it was mentioned that I was among those who had to use Proctor. And it was also mentioned that a top 15 player had a positive experience with it. I'd love to know who that top 15 player was, because
It wasn't you.
It wasn't me. I'm also, you know, I am a top blitz player. You know, I'm number 21 currently in the FIDE blitz rankings, and I know, you know, we're not going to litigate in which city most of those points were gained, and in which chess center against whom. That's for a separate topic. But the stateofchess.com, yeah, 3 months ago, this was in streamed on March 20th, 2025, and this is not about me criticizing their communication. My lines have always been open with chess.com. They have always been very responsive to me, and I want to make it like amply clear that I know that I'm constantly seemingly in the spotlight now, and I apologize for that. I feel that is something that takes a toll on the chess community. It wasn't my intention, and my goal here and my hope is that something positive comes out of this, that this isn't just another case of Naroditsky's mad at fair play and we're at each other's throats again, because whether or not, whatever your stance is on the chess.com fair play team, like, this is all we've got. And, you know, if you're an honest player, and I know that there are some people sitting in their mom's basements right now with a little smile forming, then to me, like, we're on the same team. We can't be at loggerheads because everything is going to break down. We're all people, we're all on equal terms, blah, blah, blah. But the lines of communication are open. It was kind of reassured, it was made clear to me then that we are actively working on resolving bugs. The process, the wheels are turning. You know, that's the impression that I got. The wheels are turning, and I'm a little bit worried now that the wheels have stopped turning. And if the wheels have stopped turning, then you have to be honest and say, listen, we didn't realize that this is going to cause a trouble. The juice is not worth the squeeze. I agree with you, Fabi. We have to decide on some level what kind of tournament Title Tuesday is going to be. In Freestyle Friday, the top prize is $400. Okay, it's a Fisher random event. I mean, we have to decide, is this going to be a tournament where people participate to make a living, or is this going to be fun? And I think that what we're learning right now is that it can't be both. We have to find some sort of compromise. And if it's going to be for fun, yes, you have to accept that there will be some cheaters. But my understanding was that chess.com, Fabi, we might disagree on this respectfully. I think that over time, like, my user experience in Title Tuesday was improving. I was playing, as I understood it, less and less suspicious players. But, you know, if Proctor is a necessary step, then I kind of agree. Unfortunately, it does make the experience a lot less fun. And so, like, the tournament and the vibe of the tournament is going to fundamentally change if that were the case. And that would kind of be sad.
Yeah, I've actually thought about this when it comes to, like, what chess.com events are, what they should be, also what they've been in the past. They have, like, seriously toned down their tournament schedule. You know, we used to have, kind of coming from the Play Magnus and Play Magnus days and the merger, we had the Champions Chess Tour, which was a series of many tournaments, which has now been turned into two tournaments as a qualification for the Esports World Cup. And who knows how that will change next year. Maybe it'll be the same, maybe it'll change. Although, from looking at how things have changed every year, there is a good chance that it will change again.
Well, maybe we'll be playing checkers.
maybe we'll play another sport, yeah, maybe. But when it comes to tournaments, for example, the Pro Chess League, also another tournament that existed with fair play measures in place, even though I don't think the prizes were very significant. I think most people played for a team because they supported the team, they were from that city, they had friends or whatever the reason was, or maybe they got paid by the team. But there wasn't, like, much money at stake, and there were still pretty major cheating controversies in that one very public one, and I'm sure we also know about at least one case which was not as public, and that got taken down because presumably there wasn't much money or incentive for chess.com to keep hosting that event, which I thought was a shame. Despite the you know, cheating issue we had, I still thought it was a fun event.
It was a fun event, but it wasn't commercially viable. Like, they tried it, they tried to make it some sort of a league, but it like,
well,
sponsors
when it was
were just simply not
US Chess League.
Right, USCL was the first iteration of it, and then
and we'd all play from the same place, and my dad would drive home from San Francisco from work, pick me up, and then drive me right back to the Mechanics Institute, where we'd play on the Windows 98 computers, that would, you know, an average of one war or historical event would take place by the time the computers went through the home initiation process.
Yep. For good or worse, people just simply don't want to watch that. And by the way, that was classical time control.
Before, it was like, or there was, we're playing with a fast time control this week, 45 plus 30.
Yeah, which was interesting. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but obviously it wasn't commercial.
Makes me wonder what Title Tuesday is. Like, it's their, besides the Speed Chess Championship, it's their last of, like, the big online events. I guess there's a Champions Chess Tour, but that's kind of part of the Esports World Cup, and then there's a Speed Chess Championship.
And Bullet Brawl? Just kidding.
Sorry, what was that?
And Bullet Brawl?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, in general, what Title Tuesday is or what it should be in the future, you know? Because it's their one tournament without measures, without series, besides the proctoring system that, like, I would count measures as you mentioned, everyone's a part of it, not just some select players are asked to be and some aren't. Like, I know for sure I'm not, so obviously not everyone is. And I assume maybe it's 50-50, as you said, maybe it's some other ratio, but I don't know. It's certainly not everyone, but it's their last event without comprehensive measures for everyone. And I'm kind of wondering, should they implement measures for everyone? Should they just take out prizes and make it purely a streaming event, or minimize the prizes to something like they have these kind of streamers tournaments, Arena Kings or these sorts of things, where it's mostly just for entertainment and to show something to your audience, but you don't play for potentially $1,000.
And also they had the fair play call and everything. Go ahead, Christian.
No, but then you're just going to not have any players. Like, if you don't have any prizes, you're not going to have any players. I think you're going to slash 70% of the people playing right now. So it's just not. I feel Title Tuesday was and is just a way for them to incentivize as many people, as many title players to actually play on their site every Tuesday. And that brings a lot of publicity to chess.com. So obviously it's worth something from a sponsor's perspective, but I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too. You know, like, you're not going to be able to have this utopian 1,000 player competition where people stream just for fun, right? Like, you need
prizes. Like, the thing is, right now we're in this weird middle ground where also, like, the streamers, my understanding is that streaming inherently is an anti-cheating sort of, is a mild anti-cheating deterrent, right? So it's harder to cheat when you stream. Now, there were people immediately saying, so Daniel, are you saying that if you stream, you have to, like, you can have, you know, your friend Bob and your other friend on your other side of you, like, giving you moves? No. But it does make it harder. So my understanding is that if you're going to have a certain set of rules, there has to be, like, basic consistency. And unless I'm misreading the rule book as it currently sits, if I'm not streaming, I can have somebody go into my Twitch chat and actually chat. Like, your chat window is still open. It's still active. So somebody could chat, like, while you're not streaming. But if you are streaming, then you have to abide by, like, all of these rules, none of which apply if, like, you're not projecting your face to the world. So I agree that there's a philosophical conversation to be had. I think a lot of people are still clinging to this idea of a utopia, Christian, as you put it, where we are both, like, adhering to all these anti-cheating measures and it's fun. That's impossible. But whatever it is that chess.com decides, I will respect that. I will urge the chess community at large to respect that, as long as there is a semblance of consistency, and especially given the fact that I'm trying my best to stay out of the limelight when it comes to, you know, certain people taking pot shots at me. I've had enough of that, with full due respect, and I'm not asking for special treatment or special privileges or anything of the sort, but just to be able to keep a low profile.
Yeah, I think the
go ahead.
Sort of philosophical discussion is interesting. I sometimes, like, think about it internally in terms of other sports and what we would accept if it was another sport, or even over the board chess. Like, let's say in a Title Tuesday you have 500 players, I think at some point they were even getting close to 1,000, but these days it's probably significantly less. Let's just say it's 500. And I think Danny once said, like, they might expect 1%. Let's just say of people who are potentially not playing fair, which is not that many. So let's just say that it's 1%. So there's five people, you know, cheating in a single tournament. And we don't know. Let's just say it's random. We don't know who it is.
Thanks for doing the math.
And would we accept this in over the board tournament? Like, you go to an open tournament, 500 players is a perfectly, okay, I guess a big open, but perfectly normal.
Benask.
Yeah. Yeah. Amount you might expect if you go to one of those opens in Spain, which is attractive to players. And you know for sure that there are five people in that tournament cheating. And the organizers were like, yeah, this is how it is. We kind of know, you know, that it's probably around that amount. It's only 1%. Not that many. Good luck. And would you accept it? Would you play there? If you knew for sure there were about five people? I think Danny even said 1 to 3. So it obviously gets a lot worse if it goes to 3%.
Yeah, one maybe yes, but five definitely no.
So and that was his, I think, kind of the low end, right? I don't know. I mean, I've said some outrageous number. Kramnik probably thinks it's sort of closer to 95%. But like, it's an issue whether, and in other sports, because let's say if you're doping in other
sports. I think you would do it. I think anybody would do it. I think anybody would play with the assumption that people that get caught get banned.
But you like, we're assuming they don't get caught, right?
The second chances that I think are the problem. We're assuming they don't get caught. But is that an assumption that's part of the estimate? Is the estimate 1% of people who cheat and don't get caught, or just 1% of people who cheat for Title Tuesday?
Well, I think we're kind of speculating a bit, but let's just say that we're working with this 1% number. There are certainly not five people banned during each tournament, because we see the numbers at the end of the month, and it isn't so many players. It isn't so many titled players, right? We see like the titled closures. It's like one IM, three FMs, two CMs, for example. It's usually some numbers like that. Every once in a while, like every few months, it's just one GM, and we never find out who, which I think is also maybe an issue. But
I agree.
But it's certainly not to the point that they're like banning five people each Title Tuesday. I don't think that happens. Again, maybe Danny can correct me when we eventually speak to him about this. But in this hypothetical, it would be that you are facing five people who are, you might not face them. I mean, they're just hanging around there. Maybe you won't face them. Maybe you'll get lucky, but that they won't get caught at the end of it. I think for me, it would be an issue. And if we're talking in another sport, like it's not doping. It's not like you go a bit faster. It's like, let's say, you know, in basketball, some guy could dunk from the 3-point line. He could jump 12 feet in the air. And we're like, okay, you know, what can we do? He's jumping. He's really good. He jumps 12 feet in the air. What can you do about it? Or in tennis, like
maybe he's Michael Jordan. You know, you never know.
They can serve 500 miles an hour. I mean, you know, it's that was sort of my philosophical question, which again, it's probably a bigger discussion.
Christian, I know you have a point, so I have one more sort of big point on this.
Go ahead, Dania. Yeah. No, you're the guest. Go ahead.
I mean, I think, again, the goal here is, our goal is to eliminate cheating. And I think that there's sometimes there's two extremes here. There's the people who, you know, who are in denial about the problem, and then those who suggest that this problem is going to exist as long as the earth exists. And I've proposed a couple of measures which I think can allow us as a community to keep the tournament fun while, like, at least moving toward deterring cheating and making it easier to expose. So one such system would be like a flag system. So let's say that during money tournaments like Title Tuesday, there was a special button that that you could press. And in order to earn the privilege of being able to press it, you had to play like a certain minimum number of Title Tuesdays per year. It's like American Airlines, you know, gold status. I get boarding group 4. And if you press that button, you flag someone anonymously. And if a person accumulates, let's say, X number of flags in Y period of time, the math can be decided. They are then asked by default to adhere to a certain number of anti-cheating requirements for the next set of tournaments. And these can be very stringent. And I again want to reiterate here that if the problem is that people are afraid to do this, they're afraid of the impact it would have on their reputation. I am happy to preemptively stream every Title Tuesday with two cameras. You know, I would be happy to do it with Proctor if it didn't harm my experience. Like, the only thing that I ask is that I also be allowed to partake in the fun. But if the question here is to set the standard to tell people, like, look, you shouldn't be afraid of doing this. It's doable. You can set it up. I'm happy to participate in that. So flag system would be one thing. Physical proctoring, I always was a big fan of that. Like, I think that the logistical difficulty of this can be overstated. Like, if you've got 15 people per year for whom you need to organize a physical proctor or a location that they come to, I understand that there are challenges, but and I understand that they could show a good performance, come back home, and then continue cheating. But again, that's back to the philosophical question. Yes, no. And like, if you're that dedicated, you know, then maybe congratulations on becoming the Nigerian prince. Like, then I tip my hat. Like, at some level, if you're going to invest your entire energy to, you know, come in 20th rather than 30th in Title Tuesday, then you've earned it, is my opinion.
Yeah, the physical proctoring situation, I think, is just not feasible given the numbers. Like, how are you going to specify who those 15 people are that require physical proctoring?
Well, Chess.com would, right? Like, they
would have to be on a very special list. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it feels like you were mentioning at the beginning, you feel like you're being watched. This would be like 10 times worse. Like, when somebody.
I feel like I'm being watched, but I'm happy to be watched. Right? The point was, I'm happy to be watched. It's just like, eventually there has to be.
But you're in the minority. Like, I guarantee you, you're in the minority.
But I'm in the minority right now. Like, I'm in the 25% right now as a top player, and I'm still okay with that.
Yeah, but most people hate that, right? I would assume. Yeah, go ahead, Fabi. What's your take on it?
When it comes to physical proctoring, I think it's, of course, rather. I mean, it would be unpleasant when it comes to a tournament like Title Tuesday. But that could be a personal choice. Like, okay, if you want to play Title Tuesday, then you have to go through this. On the other hand, it's a tournament where we're talking about a certain amount of money, which is not that great for chess.com. And then they're going to have to invest much more into the actual proctoring system, which makes it, like, from their point of view, why would they ever do this? Especially because people do play. And the more restrictive the measures, the less people are going to play. So they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. They're going to spend more money. And then, like, I feel the main issue is that from a business point of view, chess.com, and it is business, although I do think a lot of the people who work at chess.com also have the best intentions for chess. But it's a business where they're not really incentivized to solve the problem. It's not a problem which would ever impact their business. Right? Like, for most of the people playing on the site, they don't really have to worry about this because they're not playing for money, and they probably wouldn't even know if someone's cheating against them. And it wouldn't really affect their rating too much because they'll lose a bit, then they'll gain a bit when they play someone who's playing fairly. So it doesn't impact someone who's just playing for fun. It impacts more the integrity of tournaments. But to be honest, like, nobody knows how much of an extent there is in cheating. I mean, you can only, like, suspect someone, but you can't possibly know. So it also doesn't really affect me because I'm not really sure how much cheating there is. Yes. Right? I have no way of knowing. Maybe it cost me money. Maybe it didn't. I just have no... Unless someone was banned and I found out about it, only in that instance can I be sure that I got negatively impacted.
It's true. I mean, I think... what was I going to say? Like I've said earlier, I think as Title Tuesday has gone on, I have felt, like, anecdotally, like, I'm either winning games or losing games to, like, people who, from my perspective, I know are not really cheating. But I think that, I agree that they're not necessarily incentivized to solve the problem. But I also think that that's like chess.com has probably, like, at least in my case, earned my goodwill through, from my perspective, their fair play measures. I feel like they are the attempt to make these tournaments honest is earnest. What makes me upset about, like, getting kicked the way that I did. And it's funny because the two times that I've run into trouble with, like, fair play rules has been the speedrun incident and this. And from my perspective, both of these things that I did, both of these rules that I violated, I'm not trying to paint myself as some sort of martyr, but I'm very concerned about the welfare of the community and the experience that my chat has and my community has. So the speedrun, I was trying to increase the educational value. This emote only, like, this is my way of rebelling. My way of rebelling is to try to make it a little bit more fun for the viewers while not, you know, in my view, compromising my own integrity. And it's a little bit sad to me that you know, the incentive structure here seems to point toward not making this a community event, but making this an event where you're locked up in a room, potentially with somebody watching you, you know, you're designated with a big red X. And it would make me really, really sad if that indeed were the direction that we were heading. So that wasn't very well thought out, but it just, like, I feel like I've seen things the opposite.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like it would be a better direction to make it more of a fun event, a community event, as you said, where you're trying to provide entertainment to your viewers or just trying to have some practice for yourself. But not as much a competitive event where they have to lock everyone down or try to, and where they're going to, like, the best case scenario for them is that they implement these increasingly draconian measures in an effort to stifle cheating, or they have an unfair system where, like, half the people are subject to these measures and half aren't. And a better solution would just be to make it more of a fun event and not one where people are so incentivized to cheat. Like,
but what do you mean by fun? Like, you would lower the prices, you would completely eliminate the prices. Like,
easier
what,
to
what,
cheat.
Like, how would you make it more fun? In your
opinion? I think, like, making it less. I mean, okay, I don't want to, like, take money away from the community, but to be honest, this isn't really great money for people, but it is incentive
it
for
is.
Cheat.
No, I. But that's
no. But the thing is, like,
I think this is where
most of the money is collected by a few people, right? It is,
sure.
Like, if we look at it at the end of the year, let's say if you win every single first prize, you make 52 grand, but
that's huge money.
Yeah, but nobody's doing that, right? Like, sure. If you're a very strong player, you're winning at most like two a year, and like if you're
a really
strong
player, stats, by the way, go on. There is a website that has all the stats, which is kind of fun.
I mean, even to a year for
if you're a really strong player, you're already probably making a few hundred grand from chess if you're that strong.
Eastern Europe wins twice, a grandmaster from Eastern Europe wins Title Tuesday twice a year. That's like 3,000, right? 3,000.
2,000. It's a grand.
Is it 1,000 only?
Yeah.
Nowadays,
let's say that they make
yeah.
Let's say that they make a few seconds.
Decent money. Still pretty decent money. Like, that person would not play if it weren't for the monetary incentive.
I mean,
like, you wouldn't play it. Would you play it if there was no money? Would you play it if there was no money? Fabi?
I don't play it for the money.
No, because I understand for you, Dania, it makes sense because you can stream it as well. You can use it as a way to build
your
community.
I would play it off stream. I wouldn't play it if there was no prizes. I know it sounds contradictory. The fact that there are prizes makes it fun. But not in the sense that, oh, I won $250
right,
or whatever for third place. It creates
incentivizes
this rush.
Competition,
that is what makes it fun.
Yeah.
But if the prizes were $0, like, we wouldn't be playing for anything. So the fact that there is a dollar value there, that itself provides an incentive, which I think is a really elegant way. And the reason why it's so surprisingly successful, like, Magnus and Hikaru and Fabi and Alireza are all playing this tournament, which has, for their, you know, standard, laughing stock of prizes, which is incredible.
Sure.
And so we need to, like, value that, I think, because if we keep trying to, like, change it in the wrong direction, we're going to be really sad if everybody stops playing and the trust will be lost. Sorry, Fabi, I interrupted you.
No. I think you're right. I do think that you can incentivize it without having heavy cash prizes, and you could also limit it so you still have something to play for. It kind of achieves that rush that you're talking about, but a bit less so. And you can probably incentivize it in other way in terms of rankings, like weighting the ratings differently in Title Tuesday, for example. So you achieve more for a victory. Again, just speaking off the top of my head, I have no idea. But it does, it still rubs me the wrong way at times. It does, like, the whole idea that, like, I'm sure we've all experienced this. Christian, you even mentioned this at the start, that like you kind of suspect that maybe someone cheated, but you can never know for sure. And even if they're banned, you'll never know for sure, but it does kind of affect your confidence. And it's also a bit of like a humiliation. Like you're playing someone who first round, like very often you play someone who's like 2,500 chess.com. They might be GM. They might be an IM or they might be a candidate master.
If they're a GM, then I have no worries. No problem. With Golubev, like, all right, cool.
No, actually, yeah, the 2,500 GMs are probably the last person you have to watch out for. But you might play someone who is like 600 points lower in the range than you over the board. And then you're playing this incredibly tough game that maybe eventually you survive or not.
You gotta draw in some Rookend game, yeah.
And then you like feel so bad about yourself. You're like, am I... It's some sort of humiliation, but it's also... like personally damaging. I don't know. Chess is also so much.
It's very much a hit on your confidence. And that basically made me stop playing Title Tuesdays as well as Champion Chess Tours. Mm-hmm. With a Champion Chess Tour is much more related to what Dania is experiencing right now. So I've had this situation where I was connected, mm-hmm. but apparently I went to a different tab. And since I wasn't on the chess.com tab when it started, it counted me as awake. And basically I lost the first game and I was super pissed about that because it's just a very silly bug that should never happen. You should still be able to like, let's say go to the restroom, you know, use the restroom for 30 seconds and then not have to worry about, you know, relaunching your Google tab or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
In order not to lose the first game. Okay. I lost the first 30 seconds. That's fine with me. I'm going to, give that advantage to my opponent, but don't lose the whole game, right? So that's, you know, I already dedicated, I stayed at home, I woke up, I, you know, I skipped breakfast or whatever.
You woke up, that's but, for me, that's already a big
whatever I did, right? Whatever I did to play that tournament, you know, I gave up something. It's a trade-off. And then to lose a game because of a bug of a system, that's very, it basically tells you that it doesn't matter, your time doesn't matter. You know, and then it kind of disincentivizes you from playing later events. And Title Tuesday, I mean, I was telling Fabio at the beginning, I've experienced many, many times the first couple of rounds just playing against a cheater or at least somebody that I assume it's a cheater and losing that game. And then I'm like, you know what? I mean, why would I play? Like, generally, I don't, you know, I'm a 2,500 level player. I'm going to win one out of like, I don't know, millions, probably never, you know? So my incentives to play are not that high, I guess.
Yeah, that's where the flag system, I think, would be so effective. Like we need to make it okay to say that someone is overperforming. Like it doesn't mean you're calling them a cheater. There has to be a pathway to being someone who truly wants honest play, who doesn't want to just throw out accusations. But if you're FM Bob Schmob from, you know, Norilsk, Russia, and you're like 6 out of 6, it's okay. You should be the one who says, yeah, I understand. I understand that this is, you know, this is something that I need to like assure people that I'm playing honestly. And it should be made pretty easy to do that. I have one last story to share just on the topic of like Fractal. This is funny, but also a little disturbing. I was playing Freestyle Friday about a month ago and I was 3 out of 3. I lost the fourth round. And I just start cussing in Russian, just like I let out a torrent as the game is going. Let's say I wasn't too happy with my opponent's play and I was just in a bad mood that day. And my impression was that they listen, like they have access to my audio on Proctor, but not that necessarily someone is just sitting and listening to me. But like when I finish this huge torrent and I bang the table, in the little chat window in Russian, my Proctor writes, oh, hey, can you adjust your second camera? By the way, that was some epic swearing. And of course, I was cracking up and I was like, thank you, but I'm just not going to adjust my second camera today. I also was like, man, you know what? I'm in my bedroom. It used to be the case that I would be literally in bed playing. Now it's like every sound is being heard. When I go into the bathroom to pee, it's like I don't want to trigger the Cuban Missile Crisis. I'm just like, you know, I'm just peeing. Like I'm not. You can't be made to feel like every step you take, every breath you take is like part of the cheating plot. And so, I just want to finish up, Fabio, I know you have something to say, by saying that I genuinely will do everything within my power to be a part of the solution. And I'm on the team of making this fair for everybody. Whatever it is that chess.com decides, I don't think it's an easy decision. I think that I'm here to offer my support for that decision, provided that there is a semblance of transparency. Because if there's no transparency, it makes me feel like there's something I'm not seeing. There's something I'm missing. And I think when it comes down to fair play, like, ideally, everything that you do should be made transparent because, you know, theoretically, we're all for the same goal, right?
Yeah, go I think ahead, so. Bobby. I mean, it really should be consistent, right, when it comes down to it also. It shouldn't be that you're asked to participate in this Proctor and...
forever.
And yeah. I'm not. Like, I actually think they should be asking me along with everyone else, and then I would probably politely tell them that I'm not too interested in doing that, but... But at least it should be thanks, equal no for should be equal for everyone. I mean, at least at this point, now that it's how many 5 months in or something like that.
Even more, yeah. And yeah, at least for the top players, it should, like, if you're winning the most Idle Tuesdays, you should have to. There has to be some system of selection.
Okay, in that case, they shouldn't ask me.
They shouldn't ask me either.
No, but
I should be four TTs in my life.
Oh, that's more than me for sure. But it should definitely be consistent. Actually, I did want to ask you kind of unrelated. But I think I saw in like one of these Twitter screenshots that you were playing on Hans's new platform. I don't know much about the events or if it's some arena style or whatever. But how did you find that platform?
Yeah, Conrad.ai. So this was two Tuesdays ago. And by the way, it was funny because, right, like Hans also said something that I took umbrage with, which is the fact that I had anything to do with the VSU ban. And I politely asked Hans to take it back. I have never been involved with fair play. It would be incredibly indecent for me to try to influence that process. But, you know, I don't have it out for Hans. I challenged him to a match after Title Tuesday. I really like playing him. I mean, we've had some interesting matches. And he said, you know, I'm down to play, but it has to be on endgame.ai. And I think he just assumed I would say, all right, no. But I just love chess. Like, all right, you want to play there? We'll play there. I made an account. I think GM Becca Harris. I submit so many Rebecca Harris accounts on all my banking institutions that I forget. I've already forgotten. And we played, I think, a 14-game 3+0 match. It was very smooth. I mean, basically, I felt like it was very similar to Lee Chess. There were some immediate, obvious kinks to work out, like the draw symbol and resign symbol. It's not labeled. So even I had trouble initially, like, distinguishing between them. And sometimes I do that even on chess.com. I'll, like, offer a draw and then be like, no, I meant to resign, I promise. Remember on ICC when people would, like, offer a draw and then immediately checkmate you? So overall, it was fine. There were no, like, big bugs. But my understanding is that there's just no promotion. Like, I don't understand how this is being advertised to the wider world. I also played the endgame.ai arena, the 2 arena. I don't know if there's a fair play system. I think Hans, you know, you can't pretend that that's not an issue he'll have to address. Like, who is there somebody in charge of fair play? And if it is, you know, Vlad, then that's a choice I will respect. I will decide accordingly whether I want to continue playing, but that's his holy privilege.
I think they're building it as they go, right? That's kind of the idea. They're just like taking it one step at a time. They're
but
not
that first arena. Like, was there any fair play?
A soft launch.
Oh, Bortnik was playing. Alexander Bortnik was playing that, and then Sasha's like, "I didn't play." It's like, "What do you mean?" Alexander Bortnik was playing this arena. He did well. It's like, I was like, you know, taking my daughter to school. You gotta like. I think Hans is discovering that there's some of these issues.
That impersonator did quite well in the event.
Somehow, I guess they just imitated his style, and you know, I guess playing the Alekhine will lead you to, you know, great success in the chess world. But it was fine. I wish it the very best. I'm happy to play. I always tell Hans, you know, it's after every match, I always tell him that it's an honor because I truly consider it an honor to play the top players in the world. I wish that. You know, Hans is a little bit less insufferable, but, and I wish that he knew that there are people in this world who just love chess, who are by default rooting on those who succeed in the chess world and who don't necessarily have some hidden agenda and are part of the deep state or big chess, the chess lobby. And I am one of those people. So if he realized that, I think that the discussion would be at a healthier point, but one can dream.
What was the result of that match against Hans? The 3-0 match?
He was tied. I was leading for most of it. It was 7.5, 7.5. We also played an end game ironically enough, not an endgame.ai, an actual endgame that I later analyzed. And I will make a YouTube video out of it. It's one of the most fascinating endgame positions I've ever come across. Not an exaggeration. So I was really, I was like a little schoolgirl, but it was tied. I think 7.5, 7.5. You can find it on Hans's YouTube. He was streaming it. I think I also published my VOD. So really fun match.
Well, yeah, there you go, Hans. You get a little bit of publicity for endgame.ai.
Be nice, okay? Like,
yes.
I think what people are asking is not unreasonable. So let's
one
all
more
be
question,
friends.
Daria.
Absolutely.
Because we sort of started this one with the idea in mind that we're probably going to keep it as a 15-minute segment. It obviously went way beyond that, but I feel we touched a lot on some important topics. Another one, a lot of people have sort of, you've been out of the commentary spotlight. And with this big event in Vegas coming up, the freestyle event, are you planning on doing any commentary? You've also done some commentary with Robert Hess, just on your own channels. Like, what's the plan for the future in terms of commentary for you?
Yeah, I mean, again, I just want to reaffirm that there was no nefarious incident that led to me taking a step back from commentary. Genuinely, my top priority was like my mental, physical health. It's not BS. Like, I genuinely,
I wanted
to have some time to decide where I wanted to go next. I want to work on my YouTube channel a little bit more actively. I have this Endgame series, Endgame.ai series. I have a lot of video ideas that I want to put into reality. I'm still deciding whether to go to Vegas and just hang out. I'm not going to commentate it. To be honest, like, I'm not that into Fisher Random commentary. I'm sorry to say, but it's just like a personal preference. I find it very difficult, and I feel like the energy that I expend even understanding what's going on, I can't convert part of that into commentary. And then you see Noderbeck thinking for 15 minutes on move one, and you know, you're discussing like the architectural style in rural France in the 17th century, and he still hasn't moved. So I might go to hang out. I obviously am playing a little bit more. I played that qualifier. I'm really enjoying feeling like a chess player again, feeling like a, you know, feeling just like one of the masses. I don't think I'm cut out for fame. I don't think I'm cut out for the public eye. And, you know, that incident with getting kicked from the tournament, it did feel very sad. And it kind of has led me to feel very apologetic for just like constantly ending up in the spotlight. I feel like I'm doing something wrong. My once vaunted powers of diplomacy are failing me, and I seem to be getting in everyone's way. And I kind of wish that I were just, you know, back to 2016 when I was playing Gibraltar and Benask, and, you know, maybe I'll be playing Classical again. Never say never, you know?
Yeah, those were the good days.
I'm
I have 29, to say.
Not 79.
Those were the good days. No.
You're going to try for the next US, I mean, not the next one, but the one after that?
US champs.
You know, I will say that I'm doing openings again. Like, I'm sitting down and being like, I want to like look at some openings. I haven't felt that way ever, really. Because like me and openings are like, you know, well, it's like honest players. So it will go in the same sense. Just kidding. It's funny because I do that all the time on my stream. I think the only way is the only way out of the situation is humor. Maybe Fabi, I'm kind of getting that hankering again. I can feel it. I love OTB Blitz. I just played a tournament in Charlotte with Pia.
The US Open still hasn't happened, right? The US Open.
I'll play that for sure.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
so there's still a path to qualification.
There's still a path to qualification. Okay, I see.
Wait, but I thought that the one in Norfolk, wasn't that the qualification?
US Open. There should be a US Open later in the year, right?
Wait, shouldn't it be like now? Like soon?
July 28th, August 3rd.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah.
Where?
In Madison Marriott West.
I'm going to play. Because it's not FIDE rated.
Wisconsin.
It's not FIDE rated. So I was going to play last year in Virginia. It's just I ran into some personal problems. This year, I think I'll play.
Yeah, there you go. There you have it. Yeah, whoever wins that one goes to the US Championship. So still a path to qualification. Cool. Well, Dania, I think that's it.
Bobby,
for
you better
for
brush up on your
Steinitz
Lopez. I'm coming.
Yeah, that's true. Didn't go too well last time for me.
Well, we played a few yesterday. That was fun.
Cool.
Dania, preparing at 2800.
Anything else to add? Fabi, the same. Anything else to add?
I think we covered a lot in 1.5 hours for sure.
Thank you as always, guys. Cool. You always give me a platform, and it's always really nice to further the discussion. I hope I can do the same with chess.com, and I hope that I can go a month without triggering a diplomatic crisis. Or rather, I'm curious to know which diplomatic crisis will follow this one, because it seems to be the new reality. But thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure. Mm-hmm.
It was also great having you, just because we have all these, you know, topics developing, new topics developing, but also because we will be having Dani at some point. So it's good to have a different perspective and you know, some angles, some new angles that we can approach that conversation as well. So I'm sure you gave a lot of those angles to us today, mm-hmm. to work with. So thanks for that. And thanks for joining.